Okay, very good. I think I'm coming at the right dip in the music. I should say good evening to RBN listeners. This is the Barton Report from Republic Broadcasting. BJ Barton is my name. And we're here today on this Saturday, 23rd day of May, 2020, which happens to be the 61st day of the lockdown in Britain, which now most people are ignoring. We've had sunny weather for 2 weeks here, and everybody out on the beaches, the public parks, telling the police to go basically F off. So the lockdown is now really tacitly finished in so many ways. And one of the most disturbing stories I find about Johnson, he looks as pale, he doesn't look well. We're told by UK column that he spent half an hour on the phone earlier this week talking to who? Bill Gates. Isn't that sick in the head? So who's running this operation? Bill Gates and the rest of them, as we too, and this witty, the chief medical officer, who is totally up to his lugs in money for donations from Bill Gates, GlaxoSmithKline, and the Wellcome Foundation. They're the two basically running this, and including the Imperial College London, which is this Neil Ferguson, who supposedly had to resign from one of the committees, Sage, for visiting his relatives, some crap like this. But this is trivia. But all that going on, and the school, the biggest thing going, apart from the scandal of the old folks' home, 10,000 people have died unnecessarily, and I mentioned last week, UK column have copies of the letters, intimidating, threatening letters sent by the NHS to care homes, public council care homes and private care homes, to take elderly patients who the NHS knew had serious COVID-19 infection, didn't tell the care homes, and now 10,000 people at least have died unnecessarily in care homes. So the lawsuits on that, after this is over, most of the relatives won't have to have money to do it. Most lawyers will take this, medical claims lawyers will take that on a contingency basis. So I was working out, they got £500,000 for each death. That'd be £5 billion added to the NHS, which is already facing, this is a shocking figure, it runs on £130 billion a year. The medical malpractice claims against the NHS pending for the last few years, 5 years, is £50 billion, that lawyers think they will lose most of the cases. Whoa. So add that to the furlough money and the lockdown money and subsidizing business. Shocking. But we need a financial person that I trust. I hope maybe I'm quoting some of his stuff today in a few minutes. Michael Schneider, the 10 horrendous facts about coronavirus. But surely the government could give, like, interest rates, like the one I'm freaking back on with. It's 0.1%. It's a joke and a half. It's sick, sick, sick. But all this, excuse me, coronavirus money could be bundled up together, even if it's half a trillion, and bundled into a bond and just give it to the public at 3%. I don't know why they can't do that. It's a way of internal bond, doing it internally. The Bank of England could do that without going to annual borrowing. And they say the government borrowed $62 billion on January, which was the same total as last year in 12 months. Sorry, in April. They borrow that much. But that's, again, at this level, it's only figures on a piece of paper. You know, it's they're issuing digital money. Well, there is a sensible guy now in charge, Andrew, what's his name? He used to sign the banknotes, Andrew Bailey, I think his name. Yeah, that is his name. He's a new governor of the Bank of England. At least he's not ex-Goldman Sachs. But he's a long-time Bank of England guy. But that can be sorted out, I think. But the last thing I'll say, well, that's come on to what we're doing today for an entire 3 hours in a minute. This thing of opening the schools where the teachers are threatening, no, we don't want to open. And that all the serious research from around the world, the good quality people, are saying that children are not at risk, not at risk. And this social distancing is not needed in schools. They don't do it in Denmark. They don't do it in Sweden. And to put children chalked around 10 or 11 feet from each other is emotionally disturbing. Everybody knows that. 3-, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, up to 8-, 10-year-olds. At primary school and infants, that is where the damage will be done. I'm talking to people around me here, there I live, for children. And I'm telling this, it's news to them, you know, but this is just part of this tyranny. And it's there's one thing I sent it to Ken and Dave today. Dave, being our electronics expert, the Stanford University, I might dig it up at the end of the program, maybe at the very end of the program to play it. I've come up with a set of figures from real, correct, forget which state Stanford is in, but real recorded, correct death certificates of deaths. And those who are infected and those who have died from a full-blown coronavirus attack, it is, surprise, surprise, 1%, 0.75%, 1.5%. And UK column were first to pick it up, of course. But I'll dig that out. It's 21 minutes into Friday's UK column news. UK column news, Friday the 22nd, I think, yeah. 21 minutes in, Patrick Henningsen, who's been at this long time, and Mike Robinson. And they used the best statisticians and actuarians, gave out this figure that is pretty much a batting average. Or the extreme cases of Italy, which has extreme situations and 5G and all the rest of it. And the other disgusting thing is children coming down with a disease, an ailment and a disease, they're giving a false name to it. They're calling it Kawasaki disease. It is not that. These are children who have been in the way of a 5G blast, a high fever with a rash, and like chicken pox, scalding of the skin almost, being baked on a 5G transmission, and they're calling it Kawasaki disease, which is a lie, a lie, a lie. That's an absurd, a disorder that gives similar symptoms. But again, Mark Steele is onto this again, and communicating with him. And I'll get to the latest update from him shortly. But it's just shocking. But people are waking up, and despite the clamp on 5G and vaccination information, but the evidence on vaccinations is just overwhelming. I'm surprised that so many people are now becoming aware. One thing about the lockdown is that people have time to look up a lot of data and information, and I think they're wise to the fact that Facebook and Facebook, Google, YouTube are liars beyond belief, and that not to mention, I was just talking to Dave about Twitter. That is a cesspit, an absolute cesspit. But it's Zuckerberg has stated, only little truth he told, that they are working with the government and the NSA and to seek the truth. Yeah, barefaced government propaganda. So it's an arm of government, the CIA, it always was. Facebook, and God help people who think otherwise. I mean, they're so stupid. But later in the program, we're playing, giving the bulk of the program over to a fantastic interview with Jordan Peterson, right? Who is, I've been watching his stuff for about a year now. And he's a Canadian psychologist, sensible historian of the modern world, and many things we could describe him as. And he was a university lecturer in a sensible university for years and years and years. And I think he's ditched most of them now because they've gone totally communist. But he's been interviewed by a rabid feminist called Helen Lewis, who's a semi-permanent fixture of the BBC these last number of years, and they drag her on to political programs. She's a feminist New Age freak, but anti-Brexit, pro-abortion, and trying to twist history around in a loop. But she goes over about 100 points. It's a 100-minute interview. This is quite long. But we'll get through it today, and at the bottom of this hour, we'll start it. But Jordan Peterson absolutely takes her apart, piece by piece, on every one of these crap ideas she has. And it's a masterpiece, and it's a very important piece regarding this new age world we live in. It covers so much stuff. And the gay parenting thing, the gay fostering, also the transgenderism, all that kind of stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But each point she raises, he absolutely dismantles her with reason and logic. And he did it also to Kathy Newman of Channel 4 there 2 years ago, which was a short interview, about 9 minutes. But he absolutely lacerated her and left her speechless. And she's a lefty liberal, part of this crap you get on the BBC now. It's polluted beyond belief. The news division of the BBC is now, as I've said so many times, rancid. Rancid, rancid, rancid. And one of their ex-journalists who Anna Breeze. Look out for her. Anna Breeze on the internet. She's putting out the truth. Started her own channel and is struggling to survive in lots of ways. But she was a presenter, producer on BBC and Panorama, but she had to leave because of the censorship and political correctness, which crippled the BBC and investigated anything, including the paedophiles and carry on and the abuse of children. They're just not covering it. They follow a major story that's in the courts, but they will not investigate. But Anna Breeze, good person. I hope she hooks up shortly with UK column and others. But that's somebody I might replace some of her stuff next week. But Peterson, very, very good. I mean, a breath of fresh air. And to group all these things together, the hard left-wing Democrats are fighting in America. They're not talking so much about that, although the interview takes place. He's a Canadian. He operates in North America. See, Helen Lewis is from London. She interviews him in GQ thing in America after one of his conferences. But she thinks she has the upper hand, but she's left with every single weapon she throws at him destroyed. Like it's like shooting clay pigeons. And it's a great piece. And sorry it's so long, but at the bottom of the hour thereabouts, we'll get to that today. But other than that, the lockdown is a key thing. Mike Adams used to say at the very beginning of this, the tsunami wave of economic destruction will be way worse, precede it, parallel it, and 3 years, 4 years, 5 years after it. One of the figures, we'll come to his thing in a minute, Michael Schneider is saying that of all the furloughed workers in America, he reckons 42% of them will actually have no jobs to go back to. That's a shocking figure. If that arrives at a similar figure, say 25% in the UK, because this is a service economy, as is America, and a service economy will take the roughest hit in this COVID-19 that's established by economists that will tell the truth. And Schneider is saying here, the last recession was really, really bad, but it was never like this. It is time for us to face reality, and that means admitting that the U.S. economy has plunged into a depression. This is already the worst economic downturn that America has experienced since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and we are right in the middle of the largest spike in unemployment in all U.S. history by a very wide margin. Of course, it was fear of COVID-19 that burst our economic bubble, and fear of this virus is going with us for a very long time, to be with us for a very long time. So we need to brace ourselves for an extended economic crisis. And at this point, even Time magazine, liberal lefty Time, is openly referring to the new downturn as, you know, the economic depression, but the new normal. That's coded language for a lot of stuff. Needless to say, there will be a tremendous amount of debate about how deep it will be if it eventually become. Just correct my screen, yeah. In order to prove my point, let me share the following numbers with you. The header of his article is 10 numbers that show the U.S. has fallen into horrific economic depression. Just type in something here that needs to be done. He says, in order to prove my point, let me share these 10 points. Number one, according to the study that was released by the National Bureau of Economic Research, more than 100,000 U.S. businesses have already permanently shut down during this pandemic, and that represents millions of jobs that are never coming back. Number two, the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta is now projecting that U.S. GDP will shrink by 42.8% during the second quarter. Well, okay, that was temporary, and it'll start rising quickly, and that'll be fine. But we'll go into his article deeply here. I'm sure he'll cover that. A new GDP forecast for the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta for the 3 months through June. Well, it's the same figure again, 42%. The bank describes the data as an outcast, N-O-W-C-A-S-T, an outcast, a real-time compared with the official government report of the GDP, which is dated. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Third fact he's putting up, prove that things are collapsing. On Friday, we learned that U.S. retail sales were down 16.4%. I think that's very little during the month of April, and that that's a new all-time record. But pennies ought to file for bankruptcy. U.S. Factory output was down 13% last month, which was worse than ever. U.S. industrial production fell 11.2%. On Thursday, we learned that the number of Americans that had filed initial claims for unemployment benefit during the pandemic had risen by another 2.9 million, and which gives a total of 36.5 million. To put that number in perspective, well, it's 6 million in the UK, and America's five times bigger than the UK. To put that number in perspective, at the lowest point of the Great Depression in the 1930s, about 50 million Americans were unemployed, well, in a much smaller population. But in pro rata, it's worse than the Great Depression. According, number seven, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, another dipstick mark, the real rate of unemployment in the U.S. is now 31%, really. According to a survey, the Fed officials have just conducted, almost 40% of Americans with a household income of less than $40,000 a year said that they have lost a job during this crisis. 40%. One study has concluded that 42% of jobs during this pandemic will end up being permanent. Yeah, that's the figure that he highlights in another article. 42% of the furloughed workers will actually have no job to go back to. According to a professor of economics at Columbia University, the U.S. homeless population could rise by 45%. We have never seen economic numbers this horrifying, and more awful economic numbers are coming in the months ahead. So that covers the 10 points. And he says, at this point, there are so bad that even Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is openly admitting that he doesn't really know how long this economic downturn will last. Well, anybody claims they do is talking, so at least he's telling the truth there. Excuse me, the economy will recover. He's quoting somebody here. We'll get through it. It may take a while. It may take a period of time. It could stretch through the end of next year. Well, anybody who doesn't think it will take 3 years is hallucinating, I think. And I was talking to car dealers here that are closed down at the moment, and they are agreeing with me that any prices they quoted on pro rata trade-ins last December, January, they just don't know what to quote now. They don't know. Do they drop a 25% on your value? Do you drop 50%? I just don't know. But the very good moving journalist, Quinton Wilson, I hope he'll do a special on that soon. But that's a big part of the economy here, the car manufacturing. It's a bizarre figure in the US and the UK. 80% of what's manufactured here is exported, and 80% of what we buy is imported. Figure that out. But car sales in January were down 97%. Sorry, in April, down 97%. Well, that's a shutdown. But there is an incredible desire, like America, to own cars. But as I've been saying, so many programs right through the years, the amount of money tied up in financing cars here is insane, absolutely insane. But there's a plus here in that regard. But the stock to cars are holding. Anyway, go to the bank. And we can thank you.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
The Republic Broadcasting Network late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
Is the Second Amendment your line in the sand? Is the United States Constitution important to you? Are you worried about gun confiscation? You need to join us for free at gunconfiscation.com. At gunconfiscation.com, you will meet like-minded patriots, get the latest Second Amendment news, and find anything you need to prepare for gun confiscation. Visit gunconfiscation.com today. That's gunconfiscation.com. Which side are you on?
I'll just finish this article by Michael Schneider, and he's saying, fast forward today, coronavirus outbreak and the ensuing lockdown has essentially frozen the commercial real estate market. Well, it's been finished. Buildings market. Buildings that were once used for restaurants, offices, hotels, spas, etc., as classified as non-essential, have been soaring. I've seen soaring vaccines. What? It's classified as non-essential. I've seen soaring vaccines. I don't know about that. This is single-handedly sending the commercial property market into chaos as vaccines soar. Well, one figure from the UK from a very good economist is that the drop there will be 40% in value, and anybody renting any premises, there'll be a tsunami of claims to renegotiate the rent. So there's going to have to be an arbiter, if you like, local authority, banks, and landlords to get together to have any sanity in moving forward. But the latest TREP, T-R-E-P-P, remittance data compiled by Morgan Stanley showed a quarter of all commercial mortgages-backed securities, CMBS, could be on the verge of default. 25%. Wow. And Schneider saying, I am personally convinced that we are on the precipice of the greatest commercial real estate implosion in American history. Well, that's an easy one to calculate. That's number one on the list. As the dominoes tumble, it is going to send wave after wave of devastation through the financial industry. And it's going to make the subprime meltdown of 2008 look like a picnic. But at least bankruptcy lawyers will have plenty of work and chartered accountants. Last week, we learned that JCPenney filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. And, of course, the bankruptcies that we have seen so far will just be the tip of the iceberg. He said, I think the politicians all over America are going to be deeply regret overreacting to COVID-19 because nobody is going to be able to put the pieces back together for economy. Sadly, very few understood how shaky our debt-fueled economy boom was. Well, there's been no growth, I reckon, for 35 years. It's been credit card and debt created. Now, there's no real growth and reduction into a service economy at every single level. But the other thing is Bill Gates is blithely saying now, getting really cocky because he thinks he's now reaching the zenith of his power, that 700,000 people will be harmed or killed by his coronavirus vaccines. 700,000. 700,000, well, 120,000 young girls were in paralysis in India. He was run out of India. And it is absolutely disgraceful the media in America and in Britain can't just plaster that all over the front pages of their newspapers. But him talking to Boris Johnson, I mean, that make you puke, absolutely puke. But he says, as the lockdowns are lifted, don't forget these 10 basic facts about the Wuhan coronavirus. That's Mike Adams. Well, there is a slight bit of history there. And compulsory vaccinations, the Constitution and the hepatitis B mandate for infants and young children. That's an article on the RBN website. And another header of an article, we'll get to these next week. San Diego official reveals only six countries reached nearly 200 COVID deaths only 200 coronaviruses deaths in the last 3 months. But the figures are getting out that the actual death rates of full-blown coronavirus, if you separate elderly people that are very fragile, it's less than 1% of those presenting with the virus, right? Way less. And that Stanford University thing, before the end of the program, I'll get the exact reference on it. That's a truthful piece of research that UK column covered this week on Friday. It's halfway through the program on, I think, minute 21 out of 54. And the other thing is, after pandemic, video goes super viral on Brighteon. Facebook bans all Brighteon links. Well, they would, wouldn't they? But yeah, Facebook, they're on the warpath, banning everybody now, left, right, and center. And also there's this so-called victory. German mass surveillance abroad is ruled unconstitutional. Well, there's a major thing that needs to be dealt with on its own next week, maybe. The UK, the German Constitutional Court, which we don't hear much about, we all hear about the EU institutions, has banned the German government dealing in bonds issued by the European Central Bank. And they said the Constitutional Court has the power to stop it. And because they're dealing in junk, total junk. And that was a major piece. I'll get to that next week because we're going to this Jordan Peterson thing in a few minutes. And I said the US government now has a new secret watch list, can track Americans without a warrant. But anybody who gets involved in this track and tracing on your phone for COVID virus, that's the end of your life, basically. You're basically a caged animal. And Adams is saying in another way, Health Ranger, that's his name, Mike Adams, warns that mandatory vaccines are medical rape and a form of felony assault with a deadly weapon. Correct. And I said the WHO, absolutely disgrace, like the CDC. WHO inadvertently admits that the vaccinations won't work against coronavirus. And they're ordering up, 500 million syringes. Wow. And again, jumping back to the UK, the NHS in the UK, common purpose towards a million change agents. Well, those disgusting woodwormer embedded in the local government and in all sorts of organisations in the UK. And there's another article which is 19 pages. COVID-19, the big pharma players behind the UK come from lockdown. Well, I named some of them there. GlaxoSmithKline, the Wellcome Foundation, and the French company. Okay, we're going to break and we'll be back with the Jordan Peterson piece. Okay.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus? For a one-time donation to RBN of only $500. It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsite.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendovite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendovite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Okay, and we'll have a clear run now. So Ken is lining up. If you count me into starting it, Ken, 3, 2, 1 on my headset.
How much responsibility do you feel that you have, particularly guys at the alt-right, who, as you say, some of them have enjoyed your work and say, I'm not one of you guys. I'm not with you guys.
They haven't enjoyed my work.
I've definitely read bits on the internet.
Read more.
You've sold 2 million copies of 12 Rules for Life. You have 800,000 followers on Twitter, 1.4 million followers on YouTube. What is it that you're selling that so many people want to buy?
I don't think I'm selling anything.
Well, I went to a show where you were selling tickets to your show, so people are willing to pay a lot of money to see you speak. You know, what is it that you think that people are hungry for? They want to hear from you.
They're hungry for a discussion of the relationship between responsibility and meaning. And we haven't had that discussion in our culture for 50 years. We've concentrated on rights and privileges and freedom and impulsive pleasure, and those are all useful in their place. But they're shallow, and that's not good, because if people are moored shallowly, then storms wreck them, and storms come along. So I'm talking to people about how they can build a foundation underneath them that works, and people need to know that, because otherwise their lives are harder than they need to be.
But what is it that you have that no one else has? What are you offering that no one else is right now?
Well, I think that is what I'm offering. That's not part of the public discussion. You know, and it's grounded in my clinical knowledge. So I've been a clinician for a very long time, and I'm familiar with the works of most of the great 20th century clinicians and a reasonable amount of philosophy and a good swath of literature. And I'm a credible scientist, and so I can bring that all together. And I've tried to bring it all together and to make a case for the significance of individual life and the psychological necessity of courage and nobility and responsibility, these things that sound old-fashioned, but are old-fashioned in the best sense. They're old-fashioned because they've lasted forever and they're absolutely necessary. And people need a call to responsibility because they need to mature. They need to want to be adults. You know, and I don't think we do a very good job in our culture of making a case for why it's a good thing to be an adult.
And two things really made you famous, which is, first of all, is the book, 12 Rules for Life. Mm-hmm. The second one, I think, was an interview that went viral with Kathy Newman of Channel 4 News, which mm-hmm. you talked about
Joel
men
Rogan's
and women.
Joe Rogan's podcasts help plenty.
Too. Right, he's got a big, big following. But that was, I think, really fascinating, that interview, because it was specifically mm-hmm. about men and women. And you said at the time, you know, YouTube skews very male and your fan base is very male. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case? Are you still mostly primarily talking to men?
I would say the talks are probably 60-40, 65-35 male to female. The book sales, I don't know. I doubt it, because usually it's women who buy books, although men do buy nonfiction if they buy books. We don't know the demographics on the books. But the book has definitely expanded my audience, I would say. And that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I never set out specifically to talk to men. My students for most years at the university have been primarily female. I think most of my graduate students have been female. It might be about 50-50, but I think it would probably tilt more in the direction of female. So it wasn't like, it wasn't something I set out to do. I think, though, that, as I said earlier, well, I can't tell how much of it is merely a consequence of the fact that YouTube skews so male. It might also be something to do with the call to take on voluntary responsibility. I'm not exactly sure why that would be more necessary for men right now. I think it might be because our culture confuses men's desire for achievement and competence with the patriarchal desire for tyrannical power. And that's a big mistake. Those aren't the same thing, even a bit. So, and it's very inappropriate psychologically and sociologically to confuse them. So,
well, one of the things I want to come back to is this idea. So that you say in the book, you know, there is masculine order and feminine chaos.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, I say that those are symbolic representations of the two things.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. So why? Why is order masculine?
I think it's because our primary social hierarchy structures are fundamentally masculine.
And that's not the patriarchy?
Well, it's not the modern idea of the patriarchy, that's for sure.
I mean, that's my idea of the patriarchy, which is a system of male dominance of society.
Yeah, but that's not my sense of the patriarchy.
So what's yours?
Well, in what sense is our society male-dominated?
The fact that the vast majority of wealth is owned by men, the vast majority of capital and is owned by men. Women do more unpaid labor.
It's a very, very tiny proportion of men, and a huge proportion of people who are seriously disaffected are men. Most people in prison are men. Most people who are on the street are men. Most victims of violent crime are men. Most people who commit suicide are men. Most people who die in wars are men. People who do worse in school are men. It's like, where's the dominance here precisely? What you're doing is you're taking a tiny substrata of hyper-successful men and using that to represent the entire structure of Western society. There's nothing about that that's vaguely appropriate.
But I could say equally well that most rape victims are women. You know, terrible things happen to people of both sexes.
And you could say that with perfect utility, but that doesn't provide any evidence for the existence of a male-dominated patriarchy.
Well, there
it
are,
just means that terrible things happen to both genders, which they certainly do.
But there are almost no women who rape men, for example. So that is an asymmetry there in sexual violence.
Well, yes, there's an asymmetry in all sorts of places, but that doesn't mean that Western culture is a male-dominated patriarchy. The fact that there are asymmetries has nothing to do with your basic argument.
No, but you might
this
equally...
This is a trope that people just accept. Western society is a male-dominated patriarchy. It's like, no, it's not. That's not true. And even if it has a patriarchal structure to some degree, the fundamental basis of that structure is not power. It's competence. That's why our society works. It's only when a structure degenerates into tyranny that the fundamental relationships between people become dependent on power. It's not power. If you hire a plumber who's likely to be male, it's not because there's roving bands of tyrannical plumbers forcing you to make that choice. And it's the case with almost every interaction that you have at the face of our culture. You're dealing with people who are offering a service of one form or another, who are usually part of the broad middle class, and who offer, and what you're looking for is the person who can offer the best service, and you can find it. It's not a consequence of being dominated by anything that's tyrannical. And then again, our culture, our Western culture, which is by no means perfect, and certainly has tyrannical elements, like all cultures do, is the least tyrannical society that's ever been produced, and certainly the least tyrannical society that exists now. So where's the patriarchy exactly in all of this?
Well, saying that it's the least tyrannical society is not the same as saying it's not a tyrannical society.
That's exactly why I said it was the least tyrannical society.
But that's what I mean. So you haven't debunked the existence of patriarchy then. You've said that actually now is better for women.
I don't have to debunk it.
Women.
You have to demonstrate its existence.
Okay, well, let's go through it. I'm writing a book about feminism in the moment. Until 1919, there were professions that women were barred from. They simply were not allowed to do it. Until 1880s...
Why would you blame men for that?
Because who was in those professions, who was guarding entry to those professions, who was worried about losing their status if women became doctors?
What do you think it was that emancipated women in the 20th century, just out of curiosity?
Well, a couple of different things. I think it was technology. I think it was the pill helped enormously.
Okay,
because
when was that developed?
When in the 60s.
Right, so that wasn't 1919.
No, but I also think it was a series of legal changes that started in Britain with the Married Women's Property Act, which said for the first time women are full legal beings under the law. They can own property. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is a structure that has continued throughout, from a time when women didn't have the same legal rights as men to now, when they mostly do, mm-hmm. but culture still lags behind it. I don't think you and I are necessarily talking at such cross purposes. It's just that your conception of patriarchy, as I see it in the book, is that quite a lot of men are quite nice and they do nice things for women. And
no, that's not my conception of patriarchy. Well, I don't require men or advise them to be nice, ever.
Well, you do talk about the guy who's the tampon king, the sanitary towel king of India, right?
I wouldn't call that nice.
Okay,
I'd call
would
that brave.
Okay.
Did you read about his life when he was trying to develop that?
Yeah.
God, it was absolutely miserable, and he did it anyways.
Right.
He freed all sorts of women as a consequence.
And I think
that's
that
not
was
nice. That's courageous. That's noble. That's visionary. It's not nice.
I think it is also nice. I think it is also something that is, honoring your social obligations.
I'm not so sure that that's a social obligation, because many other people would have done it had it been a social obligation. He said what he was concerned about. He saw that his wife was suffering with her monthly period and had to choose between feeding her family and taking care of herself properly, and chose to feed her family and thought he would do something about that. That goes way past nice, especially given what he had to suffer through to do all the experimentation that produced his eventual technology. So, this whole patriarchy thing, I think you have no idea how pernicious and dangerous it is.
Well, no,
you know,
I don't.
Men
I really
and women
don't. Go on.
Throughout history, have fundamentally cooperated to push back against the absolute catastrophe of existence, a terrible death rate, the probability of chronic starvation, early death, disease, the difficulty of raising children, with all the death that was associated with that, and to look backwards in time and say, well, basically what happened was men took the upper hand and persecuted women in this tyrannical patriarchy. Is it's absolutely dreadful misreading of history. It's a terrible thing to teach young women, and it's a horrible thing to inflict upon men.
I mean, I absolutely disagree with you. I think that's like saying slavery in the US was actually, most people cooperate. Well, no, you didn't. You had a system where one set of people owned another set of people. And until women got full legal rights, they could own property for themselves, they could work. Essentially, they were owned. They were
first owned by their fathers and then by their husbands. To the domination by men.
Yeah.
You already said that you thought that what emancipated women primarily in the 20th century was technological revolution.
No, not primarily, but that's one of two. I think that's
it's
two things.
It's not primarily, eh?
No.
You don't think the pill was a primary force in the emancipation of women?
I think
or
it was
the invention of tampons, let's say, or the provision of proper sanitary facilities, toilets, and that sort of thing. You're thinking instead it was the action of courageous feminists in the 1920s that produced a social revolution that overthrew the patriarchy. That's your theory.
Yeah, I think
that's a foolish theory.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear you say that, but I think, to quote you in the Kathy Newman interview, I think it's a multivariate, right? I think there are lots of different things that all contributed to women
getting
full rights.
Well, then let's not be assuming that Western society was a tyrannical patriarchy.
Well, no, that's one of them,
and
then other things happened as well. So you have the pill, you have the dishwasher and white goods, labor-saving devices in the home. I think all of those were really important. But you also have things like campaigns for the vote.
Yes, you also have things like that, yes.
So how, when in a system that existed in England until 1918, when half...
Why would you even want to look at history like that? Like, what's your goal?
Because exactly. I think the people who don't look at history are condemned to repeat it, and I think that
What are we going to do? Repeat the persecution of women? Do you think that's a realistic possibility?
Yeah, we're sitting
and
here...
How do you see that?
We're sitting here in America, right, where we've just had a fifth judge appointed to the Supreme Court who is now anti-abortion, he's now conservative. I think that abortion rights are absolutely fundamental to women being able to function as full humans in society, and I think that is now under threat in America. I think it is extremely smug and complacent to think civilization has peaked, it's all upwards from here.
Yeah, well, good luck with that, I suppose.
It's a living. There are lots of people who agree with me. There are lots of people clearly who agree with you.
There are just a lot of people, I would say, who are coming to listen to what I say because they're sick and tired of having their desire to move forward in the world and to achieve something and to take their place as adult males, let's say, who are under the weight of accusations that their ambition and forthrightness is a manifestation of something that's fundamentally tyrannical. They're not happy with that. It's not doing anyone any good, and it's also not true. It's really a terrible thing to do to young men, and it's happening all the time. That's why they're bailing out of universities like mad. There won't be a man left in the social sciences in 10 years in the universities, and it's no bloody wonder. It's an unhospitable place, and it's unhospitable precisely because of this doctrine. It said that throughout history, the fundamental relationship between men and women was one of power, essentially slavery. It's like, fine, believe it if you want. It's not going to do your relationships any good, I can tell you that. So.
Okay, well, we'll see how that one goes. I'm currently married, but I'll raise it with him. I think the university's example is a really fascinating one because you talk in the book about the fact that now women are a majority on 2/3 of college courses in the US. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen you saying, well, you believe in equality of opportunity but not equality of outcome. Maybe women.
It isn't only that I don't believe in equality of outcome. I think it's an unbelievably pathological wish and doctrine.
Right,
and
it's very
dangerous. History has demonstrated exactly how dangerous it is. Equality of opportunity is something that anyone with any sense would support, but equality of outcome, it's...
So what's your problem with there not being...
You have to be confused beyond belief to support equality of outcome.
Okay, so what's your problem with there not being enough men in the social sciences? Perhaps women are just cleverer. Perhaps that's why there are more women at university, right? Under your doctrine. I don't think that, but that's
the
logical extension of your doctrine.
It isn't the fact that there's an unequal distribution. The problem I have with it is that the reason that men are bailing out is because of the prevalence of the doctrine that you're espousing. That's the problem I have with it. It doesn't matter that much. They will bail out. I don't see any way that the universities are going to redeem themselves in the next decade. So, and maybe that will be fine. But I doubt it. We'll see.
That seems extremely pessimistic when the numbers of people going to university just generally are going up.
Yeah, well, that's not going to last for very long.
Why not?
Because it's too expensive and the universities are doing all sorts of things that aren't acceptable. Mostly ratcheting up the price. So, and decreasing the quality of what they're offering and playing into the hands of the people who are ideological acolytes of the identity politics routines and playing postmodern stunts and pushing neo-Marxism and all these things that are characteristic of the social sciences and the humanities primarily.
See, this is where I find you fascinating to me because, you know, you talk in these quite apocalyptic terms. I think that, you know, someone will listen to that and think, wow, there's a really big problem. But what we're really talking about is some irritatingly postmodern professors and some students with blue hair and funny ideas about gender in a handful of courses around America and Western Europe.
If that's what we were talking about, no one would have paid attention to me for more than about 15 minutes. So you might see this as some surface manifestation that's irrelevant, but that isn't how most people view it.
It's
certainly the case, too, that this identity politics battle of ideas was a determining factor in the last American election. If Hillary wouldn't have played identity politics, played cozy with the identity politics type, she would have kept the working class and she would be president now. So these aren't trivial issues by any stretch of the imagination. It's not just some kids having a decent time while they're being creatively rebellious at university. It's a much deeper problem than that. The doctrines that I'm opposed to are predicated on, well, one assumption they're predicated on, it's probably the primary assumption, is that the best way to view history is as the domination of a tyrannical male patriarchy, and that's true also particularly of the West, which is a doctrine I find absolutely unpalatable and historically absurd, biologically ridiculous and ungrateful, among other things.
Who's ungrateful, sorry? In that, who is being ungrateful?
Look at what you have.
Right.
You live in the best society that's ever been created. You know, I was reading about some Indonesians.
Do you mean me as a woman or me as a 21st century person in the world?
I mean.
Okay, we're going to this break. Now we'll be back with Peterson in a few minutes.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalize blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendivite. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
I'm incredibly grateful for what I have, but to me, the project of politics is
the construction of a tyrannical patriarchy. You're grateful for the productions of a tyrannical patriarchy. How does that make sense?
Because I think life is good. I think it could be better.
That's
what being
fine.
A progressive means.
That's a perfectly
means.
Reasonable proposition.
But I guess
that isn't commensurate with your claim that you're the beneficiary of a tyrannical patriarchy.
Why not?
How can it be good if it's the consequence of a tyrannical patriarchy? Tyranny isn't good, is it? I mean, that's the definition of tyranny, something that isn't good, and yet it's produced all these things that you're grateful for. Like, doesn't that contradiction bother you? Where did what was good come from?
I think I'm benefiting, actually, from a lot of things that I don't support, that are unearned privileges in my life. I think that's absolutely true.
Like your job?
Like, I have a very good job. I had a loving family.
Quit.
I don't think that's going to do the world any good, is it?
That's a hell of a fine rationalization for your privileged position.
Oh, well, fair enough. But,
you could trade it off with someone who's less privileged.
I could.
That'd be a start.
I could do that, but I don't want to, and I won't, and I don't think
Why
I
not?
Should be expected to.
Why not? Is it okay for you to occupy a position of privilege in the patriarchal tyranny? And if it is it because you're female, or is it just because it's convenient?
Let me tell you my political philosophy. I'm a I guess I'm a social democrat. So what I believe is that you should, if you have a good life, you should try and pass that on. I believe in a progressive redistributive tax system, for example. It was once said by Lord Mandelson in British politics, you know, New Labour was okay with people being filthy rich as long as they paid their taxes. Now, I'm kind of less okay with people being filthy rich.
But define filthy rich.
Well, that, I think I would leave that
you're probably in the top 0.1% of people who've ever lived on the planet. That would constitute filthy rich by historical standards.
Okay, but I'm not sure that
where
I'm going
to the line exactly?
Be able to help the Neanderthals at this point, really, by giving up some money. But this is my point, is that what I believe is, and I believe in a structure in which people who have had a good life and had lots of advantages should pay that back, pay that forwards, which I think is the message that you preach as well, right? You have responsibilities. And if you've had, like us, a lot of advantages in life.
I don't regard civilization as a tyrannical patriarchy.
But it's not purely a tyrannical patriarchy,
that's for sure.
Is it?
It's purely not.
Right.
And that's exactly the issue.
But why
because
would you
when
deal
you describe
moral
it as a tyrannical patriarchy, then you make a case that it's purely that. And that's exactly what's ungrateful.
Why
it's not purely that at all.
Why
it
is saying that something has elements of this made
that
the same as it
being
is
said.
Purely that?
That isn't what's being said. Merely to define it as a patriarchy implies unidimensionality. And to insist that that's also tyrannical doesn't offer a balanced viewpoint at all.
Well, I think that's probably where your disagreement comes with this, which is because I do not see it in that way. I do not see that as univariate at all. I see it as one
then
element.
Then why call it a patriarchy?
Because it describes an overarching structure.
Does it?
Yeah.
What if the patriarchy is fundamentally composed of women? Is it still a patriarchy?
No, that would be a matriarchy.
Would it? So let's say we take a patriarchal structure, like the medical profession, and we fill it primarily with women. Is it then a matriarchal structure? What makes it a patriarchy to begin with? Is it the hierarchical structure? Is it the fact that it's mostly men? Is it the sociological structure? Or is it the fact that it's mostly men?
Well, I think that's really interesting because male primary school teachers, for example, only 15% of them are men. And I interviewed some of them for my book. And you know what? They report exactly the same things that women do in male-dominated offices, right? They say, people have conversations that I feel excluded from. I feel stigmatized, like I shouldn't be here. People look at me askance when I say I'm a primary school teacher and I'm a man. You know, they kind of reel back. We all make those implicit associations.
So
okay, we'll go to the break and we continue on after the public hour.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.